This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Good afternoon. Thanks, everyone. Sorry for the brief delay. We know a number of you are on deadline. We're going to be covering the trustees' reports, and here with me are two leading experts on Medicare and Social Security, Paul Vandewater, now a senior fellow at the center, formerly at various points, assistant deputy commissioner for policy at the Social Security Administration, associate commissioner at the Social Security Administration, and vice president for health policy of the National Academy of Social Insurance. Also with me, Kathy Ruffing, a senior policy analyst at the center, who, like Paul, was for many years at the Congressional Budget Office as well, but Kathy also spent a number of years as an analyst at the Social Security Administration. So we have the trustees' new reports, and you might say that the main story is the impact of the health reform legislation, the Affordable Care Act. It's responsible for not only the changes, which are large, in the Medicare outlook, but also for the change, although that's small, in the Social Security outlook. I'm going to talk first about Medicare and spend most of this brief opening remarks on Medicare, where the more substantial changes are, than on Social Security. Paul Vandewater will then add a few comments, and then we'll go right to your questions. So, of course, what stands out when you look at the trustees' report on Medicare is the improvement in the two big indicators related to the Medicare Hospital Insurance Trust Fund, namely the date of insolvency and the magnitude of the 75-year shortfall in Medicare Hospital Insurance Trust Fund finance. As I'm sure you know, the trustees project that the insolvency date will move back from 2017 in last year's report to 2029 in the new report. But what is most striking is the change in the 75-year shortfall. Last year, the trustees reported that the shortfall in Medicare hospital insurance was 3.88% of taxable payroll over 75 years. In the new report, the shortfall is down to 0.66% of taxable payroll. That is an improvement of four-fifths of the gap being closed. And as the report notes, this is virtually all due to changes contained in the Affordable Care Act. Now, some, including the trustees themselves, have noted that the improvements I've just mentioned are dependent in part on effective implementation of the Affordable Care Act and the ability to sustain various of the Affordable Care Act's changes in payment rates to Medicare providers, which are tied to the providers achieving efficiencies and over time achieving the kind of productivity gains in the healthcare sector that the rest of the U.S. economy achieves. Some have questioned the degree to which that will occur, including the Medicare actuary Richard Foster in a statement that's included in today's report. However, I've had a couple of conversations with people in the last 2 hours who I think mistakenly thought that the Foster comments indicated that one should disregard these improvements altogether. That would not be correct, and I don't think it's what the Foster statement points to. Foster notes in his statement and points readers to an alternative, significantly more pessimistic scenario that is also contained in the trustees' report. Under the alternative scenario, only 60% of the savings measures, only 60% of the savings assumed from the changes in the Affordable Care Act materialize. What is interesting is when you look at the alternative scenario, you find that instead of the trust fund insolvency date being moved back to 2029, it is moved back to 2028. And a bigger change, instead of four-fifths of the 75-year shortfall being closed, half of it is. Now, under either conclusion, closing half or closing four-fifths, this is still a dramatic improvement. In our view, the most likely scenario probably lies somewhere between those two. We think that Foster is too pessimistic for a couple of reasons. First, the track record, as is shown in a paper earlier this year that Paul Vandewater and Jim Horney did, the congressional track record in maintaining Medicare savings provisions is good. Virtually all of those enacted since 1980 have been maintained except for the SGR, the 1990, excuse me, except for the SGR, the physician payment provision that Congress famously every year or two prevents from taking effect, although what people sometimes don't note is that when Congress suspends the SGR cuts from taking effect, it usually substitutes a smaller cut in its place. That is to say, a freeze or maybe a 1% nominal payment in physician payment rates, such that the physician payment rates today are about 17% lower than where they were in 2002 when Congress first began suspending the SGR cut, 17% below or relative to the 2002 payments adjusted for medical inflation. So the track record is one where the substantial majority of Medicare savings that have been enacted in the past did take effect. But the bigger issue why we think Foster is too pessimistic is that we'd subscribe more to his view if we were facing business as usual going forward. But due to two important changes in the Affordable Care Act, the landscape in the future with regard to Medicare savings differs importantly from the landscape in the past. And the two changes are, one, the creation of the Medicare Payment Board that will recommend in future years further Medicare savings, which automatically go into effect unless Congress stops them. And to stop them, if the President supports the board's recommendations, he could veto Congress's efforts to stop them, so Congress would effectively need two-thirds of both the House and the Senate to overturn them. And the other provision, given too little attention in our view, is the provision of the Affordable Care Act, under which certain, not all, certain findings from pilots, demos, and research that the law require, certain findings that would lead to reforms and savings in various delivery systems, are within the power of the Medicare program to institute administratively without running the congressional gauntlet with the lobbying power of the various elements of the healthcare industry. So given these two aspects of the law, the landscape in the future should be more favorable for achieving additional savings, additional economies and efficiencies that will underscore the payment reforms in the Affordable Care Act than in the past. But again, the bottom line of what we're noting here is even under the significantly more pessimistic assumption that close to half of the savings in Medicare don't materialize, there still are powerful enough changes in the Affordable Care Act remaining that even under the more pessimistic scenario, half of the 75-year gap is closed, most likely somewhere between the half and the four-fifths. Now, needless to say, this does not mean that lots more doesn't need to be done. Major further changes are going to need to be put into effect in the decades ahead to slow the rate of growth of healthcare costs, and obviously Medicare's impact on the federal budget includes other parts of Medicare, physicians, the drug coverage. It's not limited to the hospital insurance program. The heavy lifting remains. Nevertheless, this is a very important improvement in Medicare's financing. With respect to Social Security, the story is much more modest. The date of insolvency, 2037, remains the same as in last year's report. As in last year's report, a careful reading of the report shows that the view that some part of the public has that Social Security will cease to exist or won't be able to pay any benefits at all is entirely unfounded, even if the program went insolvent. The trustees' report shows it would pay more than 75% of promised benefits going forward, but we should all regard insolvency and a 75% payment rate as unacceptable. Social Security needs to have its shortfall closed, and the sooner that action is taken, the better that would be. I would note that there is a small improvement in Social Security's outlook with respect to the key variable of the size of the 75-year shortfall. It shrunk a small amount from 2% of taxable payroll to 1.92% of taxable payroll. Now, for those of you who really know this in detail, you know that if nothing else changes, the Medicare 75-year shortfall gets a little bigger each year for the simple reason that each year we're using a new 75-year measuring period. We add a year at the back, like 2086, 2085, whatever the new year is, 2084, sorry, and we take a year off the front. And since you're taking a good year and adding a year off into the future where there's a deficit, it makes the 75-year shortfall a little bigger. But this year, the 75-year shortfall figure, as I just noted, got a little smaller. Why is that? One reason. The provision of the health care bill, under which, starting in 2018, an excise tax will be placed on health and employer-paid health insurance premiums or plans that exceed a threshold of generosity in terms of their cost. The trustees and Social Security actuaries estimate, as most economists concur with, that this will result in a number of employers with very generous health plans moving some compensation that's now in the form of very generous health coverage into wages instead, and those wages will pay the Social Security and Medicare payroll tax. As a result of that one factor, we get a small net improvement in Social Security's outlook, and it's one of a number of factors that leads to the much larger improvement in the Medicare outlook. With that, let me stop and turn this over to Paul Vandewater.
I'd like to add only one point to those which Bob has made. With regard to Social Security, a number of people and a number of writers have been trying to make something out of the fact that in 2010, for the first year since 1983, that Social Security payroll tax income will fall somewhat short of Social Security benefits. This number, while of a numerical curiosity, is essentially of no relevance whatever for the Social Security program. Prior to 1983, over the decades before that, there were many years in which Social Security benefits exceeded payroll tax income. But benefit payments continued because of the interest earnings accruing to the trust fund, and even more importantly, because of the trust fund balances themselves. At the moment, the balance in the Social Security Trust Fund exceeds $2.5 trillion. The Trust Fund will be continuing to grow for many years to come. And as Bob already said, the trustees estimate this year, as they did last year, that the Trust Fund balances will be sufficient to continue paying full benefits through 2037. and more than three-quarters of full benefits after that. So I would simply encourage people not to get distracted over by this discussion of the extent to which benefits exceed or fall short of payroll tax revenues taken by themselves, because that's simply a partial picture and doesn't really tell you anything about the program's soundness.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Read commentary from our experts at offthechartsblog.org. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, and create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.